Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast, Jamie and John together. Jamie at 100%. John, what would you give yourself?
I'm going to say 80.
Okay. John's been sick.
Physically, I feel amazing, but my voice is not back yet. And my brain, man, I'm in a fog. So pray with me, pray for me rather, and be patient with me.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Appreciate you toughing it out. No, you don't feel good, but
it's all right, man. I love you guys. You guys being every listener out there. And do want to say a special thank you to Omar, who joined us over on Patreon last week. So thank you, Omar.
We've got a couple of 5-star reviews that have come in. I'd like to recognize. This comes from Audiology Student from Miami. It says, I love to listen to them as people, but know that I'm getting good, solid content. They never disappoint. Audiology student, John, could you use some audiology support?
I mean, I feel very well supported in that area, but I do want to say I appreciate their work in that field because people like me need it.
This one comes from Apple Caterpillar, which
that's an amazing
like
name.
Great band name. Great well, feel to
sounds
this
like
show.
An Eric Carl book from my children's childhoods.
Could be. Says, great feel to the show. Love the vibe between the two co-hosts. So thank you, Apple Caterpillar, Banana Beetle, Ladybug.
Don't make me laugh.
Yeah, I try not to. So today's case, it's been all over the news lately. I think most people have strong opinions about it, but are there actual questions remaining about what happened? We've had sentencing in the last 2 weeks, so we are waiting for part of that to be done, and there's still more to come. But without further ado, John, get us rolling.
Jamie, the case we're going to be discussing today has been known as the Au-pair murders. Now, talk to me like I'm a poor Tennessean and tell me what that means.
Yeah, my assumption about an au-pair is simply been that it's a kind of nanny, maybe a fancy nanny,
which sounds like
such a weird thing to say, a fancy nanny.
It sounds like a French nanny. Au pair, is that how you said it?
Yeah, they're generally from another country, but they may come to the United States. I'm reading off of the internet now, if you've ever heard of it. It comes from the French term au pair, meaning on par or equal to, indicating the relationship is supposed to be one of equals.
Like to their parents?
They're supposed to be a member of the family, albeit okay, a temporary one, rather than a traditional domestic worker. So they're there to help support the family in various ways. We usually think of them as taking care of the kids, but they're supposed to be a part of your host family.
So today's case is going to feature an au pair. I was talking to a lady at work several years ago, and I knew that she and I were from different tax brackets growing up when she said, did you summer anywhere when you were a child? And I was like, we went to Myrtle Beach.
We took trips. And
she's like, oh no, you didn't have like a second home that you would spend the summer in? I was like, no, that's not a normal thing.
It's not a normal thing. And it's one thing for somebody to have that. It's another thing for somebody to assume that everybody else does that.
If you say in your lexicon, did you summer anywhere? Like, we're not the same.
We are not.
But she was lovely. She was great. She was not uppity, but she was raised different. All right, man. Brendan Banfield appeared by most outward measures to be living a stable and a very successful life. So he worked as a special agent with the IRS, and that's a criminal investigation division of the IRS. Did you know they have like weapons?
They are able
to carry a weapon.
Okay.
Which is weird to me because these would be financial crimes this guy would be investigating.
Can you imagine somebody pulling out a gun and saying, hands up, show me your receipts?
I figured if anything, they would have like a holster and a TI-83.
Yes.
You know, a Texas Instruments calculator from back in the day. But yeah, this was a federal law enforcement role that involved investigating very complex financial crimes, fraud cases, and criminal conspiracies. The job required discipline, attention to detail, and an understanding of how evidence is gathered, analyzed, and presented in court. He lived with his wife, Christine, and their two young children in a very quiet neighborhood where neighbors largely kept to themselves. This was a very nice house, too. It was like over $1 million home. I know that, you know, I'm sure he's making a good living. Seems like a lot for a federal agent.
I wouldn't think an agent would make that kind of money, but maybe they come from it, you know.
Friends described the family as private, yet professional, not very social, but not very isolated either. So it just seems like they're a normal family out there doing their thing and chilling out after work with each other. Nothing about the household suggested that it would soon become the scene of a double homicide.
Yeah, a really graphic scene that we'll get into in a little bit. And I'm sure there are images online you can find. That was me. Graphic scene. I'm sure you can find photos online. The majority of the trial has been televised, so a lot of this information you can go and see for yourself if you would like to. Let's dig into Christine a little bit more. She was 37 years old at the time of her death. She worked as a nonprofit executive and had built a career centered around advocacy and community-based work. So she is out there trying to make the world a better place. People described her as intelligent, driven, and deeply committed to both her professional life and her role as a mother. She was described as trusting, especially toward people that she allowed into her home. So when we think about this relationship about an au pair coming in, she's allowing somebody to come into her home. They're supposed to be a part of her family. And that's how she welcomed Juliana Perez Mahales into her home.
Juliana had come to the United States from Brazil through the au pair program. And like many young people in similar programs, she was far away from home. She was financially dependent on this family that she worked for and living inside their home full time. My wife, I guess, technically was an au pair for a little bit to a family.
I think it has to be an international situation.
Oh, okay. Because we called her a live-in nanny.
She crossed state lines. Does that count?
Maybe.
Maybe.
She helped care for the Banfield's daughter.
To be clear, we're talking about Juliana, not your wife. Right. Now. Yeah.
Well, I was talking about my wife, too, a little bit.
She worked for the Banfields?
No, but she was a live-in nanny.
Oh, I know.
She was not an au pair.
Okay.
All right. So Juliana helped care for the Banfield's daughter and was deeply woven into the rhythms of their daily life. She was in charge of meals, schedules, and even was there for private family moments. Prosecutors would later emphasize the power imbalance inherent in that arrangement. According to the state, what began as an employer-employee relationship eventually crossed boundaries that should never have been crossed.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is a common trope in a lot of movies of a young nanny or au pair moving in and then an affair happening and it causing all kinds of different problems. And, I mean, it's a common movie trope for a reason. It happens in real life, and that's what started to happen here. Investigators claim that Brendan and Juliana began a secret romantic and sexual relationship in the summer of 2022. Again, she's living there. She's fully dependent on them. So when we talk about the dynamic, he obviously has power over her. He's paying her, and she is kind of at their beck and call for everything they want. Prosecutors tracked down text messages and digital records that later showed frequent communication and emotional intimacy. At the same time, Brendan's marriage to Christine was kind of deteriorating. They were not doing well. Prosecutors claim that Brendan began to view his wife not as a partner, but as an obstacle, somebody that was in his way of actual happiness. And they believe that that mindset laid the groundwork for this violent scene that we're going to discuss.
Yeah, before we get into that scene, I want to introduce you to someone else that is going to be involved in this case, and that is a 38-year-old father of two, and that is Joseph Marin. Joseph worked as a handyman. He would take on jobs like repair and maintenance jobs to support his family. And Joseph had no connection to the Banfield family other than being hired for work. So How does this man play into this case, Jamie?
Yeah, he came into the Banfield home as a handyman, and most people believe he was completely unaware of the situation that was ultimately a mess of relationship dynamics that he was walking into. Investigators would later argue that Marin was lured into the home under false pretenses and ultimately killed to eliminate him as a witness. So Joseph Marin and Christine Banfield are our two victims here of this double homicide that we're talking about. Take us to the day of the murder, John.
Yeah, so on the morning of February 24th, 2023, police and emergency responders were called to the Banfield home following reports of a violent incident. When officers arrived, they encountered a scene that immediately raised just huge questions. Christine Banfield had been stabbed multiple times. She was actually pronounced dead at the scene. Joseph, the handyman, had been shot and then would go to the hospital before he would later die from his injuries. Brendan was still alive and told officers that he had been attacked while trying to protect his family. So according to Brendan, it seems like everybody is at this house and then an intruder came in, stabbed one person, shot another, and then attacked Brendan himself, but he survived.
Right. And so many things jump out about this scene. One is why fatally injure two people, but not the third. Two is the fact that there were different weapons used. One person was stabbed and one was shot. That's not super common.
Immediately, that makes me think there's two intruders.
Right. So Brendan claimed that he had actually walked into the house while his wife was being attacked. And according to his initial claims, he ended up firing his weapon in self-defense during a chaotic struggle. And on its face, the story might have sounded plausible. So what he's saying is he walked in on the handyman stabbing his wife and he shot him. That's what Brendan is claiming here. And on its face, it sounds like it could have been possible. She was stabbed, he was shot, multiple killers. Almost immediately, investigators started noticing some inconsistencies in Brendan's story.
Had Joseph been here to do work before? Is this his first time in the home?
He certainly wasn't there all the time. He may have been called out before, but he was there for an extended period of time this day doing some work. So I would say that he, you know, was familiar with the family, given he had been in their house a couple times, but he was not a regular there. He wasn't somebody that you would expect to know where things are, to know how to get away with things and that kind of deal.
So detectives began reconstructing the scene piece by piece. They looked at bloodstain patterns, wound trajectories, and the placement of bodies. And when they put all these together, it seems like there's a very different story unveiling itself other than the one that Brendan is telling police. Surveillance footage, phone records, and digital communications added to the investigators' concerns. Prosecutors would later argue that the evidence pointed not to a panic, but to cold-hearted planning. And as the investigation would go further and further, attention turned to the relationship between Banfield and the au pair.
And ultimately, both Brendan and Juliana would be arrested and charged with this crime. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about Juliana's take after she found out about Brendan's story. So during trial, we find out that Brendan's story, like we said earlier, is that he came in on the handyman attacking his wife, and that shifts a little bit as we get later on into it, but he walked in and saw this happening and shot to protect his wife. The theory from the prosecution is that Brendan lured Joseph the handyman to his house in order to set this scenario up so that he could justifiably kill his own wife and move on from that, and that he pulled Juliana in on it with him. So this is kind of the two sides of the story. And what we have here is really odd, John. Both Brendan and Juliana, who were on trial for this, both took the stand. And you don't see that. Like, you rarely see one person, let alone both defendants, taking the stand. And, you know, usually when that's the case, they turn on each other, and we'll see kind of what they said. What did Juliana say about the story? Because we really didn't hear anything about her story until trial.
Well, before they would even take the stand, she would plead guilty to manslaughter. And she did that as basically a plea agreement that required her to tell the truth, tell the story of what exactly happened in exchange for a reduced sentence. Basically, you tell us what really went down. We're going to go after Brendan harder. You're going to spend some time in jail, but it will not be as much as Brendan, basically. Right. Prosecutors framed her as a young woman who was manipulated by a powerful older man with law enforcement training, and the defense portrayed her as a self-interested witness willing to say whatever it would take to save her life. So Juliana told jurors that her relationship with Banfield became sexual in 2022 and quickly escalated. She testified that Brendan would talk openly about wanting a future with her and described his wife as an obstacle that stood in the way to them having that life. She would say that he proposed creating a fake online profile using Christine's laptop. And that profile, prosecutors said, was placed on a fetish website and designed to attract a man who was willing to participate in violent role play. So that is why Joseph is here. Basically, they're trying to make it look like he came into their home to participate in this role play. And then Brendan is there to basically save his wife.
And to catch her in the act with somebody else saying that, oh, he's here for sexual reasons. So this is, again, we talked about him working for the IRS. He was a special agent. The crimes he focused on were IRS crimes. So he is trained as a professional investigator. He's not like an IRS person who also investigates. So he knew kind of the pieces that law enforcement would be looking for in an effort to get away with this.
It's kind of wild to me, dude. Like, this dude, if all of this so far is true, it is so evil that you would, you know, want to live with your nanny. So the best possible way to do that is to kill your wife, right? That's evil. But how much more evil is it to bring in a totally unrelated and innocent man into the picture and ultimately murder him and then trying to put all of this on him to begin with? Like, that's a... You're already evil. Somehow he was more evil than evil.
Yeah, he took it to another level, bringing in somebody completely innocent from the outside to do this and to be kind of the fall guy for his reason for killing his wife. Juliana had told the jury that on the morning of the murders, she was inside the home when Joseph Marin arrived. He had been hired by Brendan to come and do handyman work, but also framed as a potential lover for Christine. Juliana testified that she heard shouting and chaos upstairs and became terrified as all these events and all this violence unfolded. She said that she saw Brendan shoot Joseph Marin and then proceed to stab Christine to death. So according to Brendan, the order of events is his wife's getting stabbed and he shoots the man. But she says that she saw Brendan kill both of these individuals. She described covering her ears, covering her eyes, trying to look away during this stabbing, saying it was something that she still struggles to live with, because this is absolutely something that is traumatic for anybody and everybody involved. Afterwards, she said that Brendan got her to call 911. And he fed her information to tell the authorities so that when they arrived, they would see the scene from the point of view that he had tried to set up.
Attorneys attacked her credibility aggressively. They emphasized her plea deal and argued that she had every incentive to lie. And, you know, to an extent, they're not wrong. I mean, if she is able to tell the jury that he did all of this and make herself look as if she is the young, manipulated young adult in this situation, then that's going to benefit her. But the point of this whole thing is to find out the truth. So they also pointed out inconsistencies in her statements that she made over time. Prosecutors would counter her testimony and would say that it was supported by digital evidence and forensic findings. Again, the prosecution is really trying to go after Brendan here. So they are okay with everything she is saying because it helps their case a lot.
Right. And she's got a plea deal. So she's technically not even on trial at this point. She has struck a deal with the prosecution, and the defense attorneys we're talking about are all Brendans, who are trying to downplay her credibility to try to show that she knew more about this than she did and try to get Brendan to have less culpability for the crime.
So earlier when I said attorneys attacked her credibility, that was his defense attorneys trying to attack her credibility.
The jury was instructed to weigh her testimony carefully because anytime if you've been on a jury, what they tell you is you guys are the ones that are to decide who's telling the truth and who's not and how much weight to put on each person's testimony. Because in her testimony, she admitted guilt as to helping cover this up and being involved, but she also had a plea deal, and you have to disclose what those incentives are so the jury is aware that, yeah, she's getting a reduced sentence for saying this. So how much of it is real? How much of it is just her trying to get off the hook? And then Brendan made the decision to testify in his own defense. By the Fifth Amendment, you don't have to speak on in any situation where you're being accused of something and could potentially incriminate yourself.
I would need, even if I was completely innocent, do not need to go on the record in my own trial.
Right, because the prosecution has all the ammunition and tools available to tear you down and, potentially trick you into saying something that contradicts the evidence or contradicts your original story, and then you look guilty anyway. So chances are you're not going to come off the stand looking great here.
Well, how did he do?
Well, he admitted to having an affair with Juliana, but he denied any plan to kill his wife. His new story was that he described returning home after receiving a call from Juliana that something was wrong. He was afraid his family was in danger. He claimed he walked in on a violent assault and acted to protect Christine. When you hear him talk about this on the stand, it sounds like at first that he walked in and thought that his wife was having sex with somebody, but when he walked in, she was being attacked. And he insisted that everything happened too fast for it to have been planned, that he had no role in stabbing Christine. He insists that he was reacting to what he thought was her being attacked by somebody else.
Prosecutors dismantled his account piece by piece. They highlighted contradictions between his testimony and the forensic evidence. Medical experts testified that Christine's injuries made Banfield's version of events very unlikely. Prosecutors argued that Banfield's calm behavior after the killings was not consistent with shock. If everything happened the way that he described, even if he is a quote-unquote law enforcement officer, you've just seen one of the most traumatic events that you hopefully would ever see in your life. And he, by all accounts, was kind of calm and collected after all of this, kind of as if he knew it was going to have happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know. Anytime we have a 911 call, I'm very quick to say, don't judge people on how they sound, because people react to trauma. People react to horrific incidents very differently. Your reaction, John, would be a lot different from mine, I would think. So, and there are a lot of reasons for that. Shock is one of them, but for him to be calm, I don't know. That's just having seen so many 911 calls. I do dismiss that piece of it. Now, corroborated with everything else, it does suggest something else, that he knew what he was doing. He knew what would make him look guilty, and he was trying his best to avoid that. Again, the forensic evidence, they had the patterns of the way that the blood had spattered in the room, the way the blood was or was not on the two individual victims, and they essentially showed that his story was a lie. So, John, let me ask you this. In a case where you have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that something happens, is proving that the other person is lying enough to prove that? So they're trying to prove beyond reasonable doubt that he killed both these people.
Right.
And let's just say they didn't do that, but they're showing that what he's definitely lying about not killing her. So he's lying about his story completely, obviously. Can a jury overcome that? Like, is there any way, once they saw that he was full of crap, to not convict him?
Man, in my mind, if I'm on the jury, no. I mean, I have to fully, 100% in the depth of my soul, believe that the version of events that you are telling me is 100% true. And if I walk away with anything less than that, you have screwed yourself.
That proves you're a liar, but does it prove that you committed this murder?
Well, I would think that I'm not going to take his testimony as the only basis for that information. Right. But if I'm also hearing some inconsistencies in his story and I have forensic evidence showing me that his version of events doesn't line up with what science says, I think I've heard what I need to hear. Well, what about you?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think if everything points one direction and he's lying a lot, then I think it makes all the sense in the world. They didn't have necessarily his fingerprints on the knife, which if they did, he lives there and could have used the knife or whatever. But they had enough circumstantial evidence to show that he's lying, to show that they created these fake accounts for his wife.
Was Joseph's DNA on the knife? Did he hold the knife?
That's a good question. I don't know if he put it in his hand or what. I didn't hear that come up. So I think that would have been a strong case for the defense if it had been. So I don't think that they were able to determine that. And I don't think Joseph was wearing gloves. Men of handy. They occasionally will wear gloves for certain projects, but I don't know that he was. The jury deliberated for a few days, actually, and they came back with a guilty verdict for Brendan Banfield on the murders of Christine Banfield and Joseph Marin. Jurors ultimately decided that they did not believe his claim of self-defense, but they believed that this was a premeditated crime he had planned and knew what was going to happen and had planned ways that he thought would get him out of it. After the guilty verdict, both members of both families of Marin and Christine were present in court, and they were able to hear what the verdict was, and they're going to be able to give victim impact statements. So in this trial, though, Banfield, due to being found guilty of premeditated murder in the state of Virginia, that carries a mandatory life sentence. Now, his official sentence hasn't been handed down. I think it's going to be in June, but being found guilty of this is a mandatory life sentence, which is, if he did it, that's what he should get, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think there's going to be a death penalty for any of that. Most states, and I don't know about Virginia in particular, but most states don't even have a death penalty anymore. So life without the possibility of parole sounds good to me. I'm curious to see what kind of sentence the au pair has. Because manslaughter, we did a case the other day where that could mean as little as 3 to 6 years. So
you're in luck. She was sentenced on February 13th. As part of her plea deal, the max sentence she could get was 10 years, and she got that.
All right.
So again, this is a plea deal. She pled out for manslaughter, or else she would have been charged with murder as well. So she's pleading to a lesser charge for a lesser sentence in return for her testimony against Brendan.
Man, I don't know if we can speculate on all of the reasons why, but like,
it's our show. We can speculate on whatever, man.
How many cases have we covered like this? And why is murder the obvious solution to this problem rather than divorce? Obviously you have some problems in your marriage, or you have a problem internally because you're attracted to your nanny more than you are your wife. But why is it to save face? Is it, I can't leave my wife and marry this 20-something-year-old. That would look awful. So instead, I'm just going to murder my wife. Oh, and I'm going to bring in this random guy to make it look like this rape gone bad, and I'm going to be the hero instead of a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, is that really all the logic there is to this?
I can't. And maybe there's that psychological barrier that stops me from my mind even going there, or your mind even going there, that some people just don't have. But we see it time and time again, people wanting out of relationships, and they decide that the most efficient and effective way is taking their life. Now, that's horrible and awful, but you're right. Bringing Joseph Marin into this was just so, and I mean, it was all unnecessary. So it's hard to say that's worse, but it's so stupid.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
I love in court, they were able to do like basically a forensic digital review and determine that he did in fact make this account for his wife. So there's really no question that he brought in this guy on purpose to make it look like what he needed it to look like.
Yeah, it's really tough to look at and say that he didn't do this. I fully believe that he did. I do wonder in the back of my head, because he stuck to his plan of this was me defending my wife. He could have taken the route to throw Juliana under the bus and say that she manipulated him, but he didn't do that. So that makes me think that he was the person in power and he lured her in to help cover it up and all those things. But I wonder if her role, if we know the complete part she played in this.
That's what I was about to say, man, is am I a big softy for saying that maybe 10 years is too much for her? Like, how much did she have to do with this? Did she ever stab Christine? We don't think so, not based on her testimony. So if her participation was just, I'm here in the house, you're going to do whatever you do, and then after all the dust settles, we're going to run away together. You know, you do have a duty to warn if you know some harm is going to befall someone. But I don't know. I just kind of feel very sorry for her because of, I think she got tangled up into a mess than she realized it was going to be a bigger mess than what she realized it was.
And I know she was in her 20s, and we often look at teenagers as being groomed and that power dynamic. It's the same here. Just because she's 22 when this happens instead of 17, I don't look at this any differently at all.
I have loved ones who are in that 17, 18 ballpark, and they're idiots, man. Like, I love them, and I'm not talking about anybody specific, but you can definitely be manipulated even at that, what you would think is a mature age, but there's room for manipulation there.
Absolutely. And yeah, I put all this on him. I'm glad he got that sentence. Perhaps she can get out for good behavior or something like that. And I don't know, man, I hate to say that you can't trust people and that you need to put all these barriers up in your life, but I would just say, if my wife said, you know what, I think we need to hire a nanny or an au pair, and I'm like, she's got to be like old. She's got to be like, get a grandma over here. Like, I don't even want the perception of this happening. I don't know. I try to prevent dangerous situations, and that ends up being a dangerous situation a lot of the time. I won't say the majority of the time, but a lot of the time.
You need like a Mrs. Doubtfire situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not somebody that's going to, and I'm not saying that that couldn't happen with an older lady. Robin Williams played a great nanny.
Especially if she's loaded,
right?
Because if I got a sugar mama situation.
I think if she's loaded, she's probably not looking for nanny money. You know what I mean?
Maybe she just enjoys being around kids.
I don't know. But yeah, I hate to say it, blame, certainly no blame on Christine here, but I think there are a lot of things people should consider when bringing people into their home, and I've just seen this too many times, so it makes me really, hesitant to consider it.
I don't need an au pair, but I do need, what is a cleaning lady called in a fancy term?
A maid?
A maid.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would.
I don't want to pay for it, nor do I have the means to.
So are you putting out a call for free maid service?
No, you know what? My life's too complicated as it is. I don't need that in my life.
You don't need another person in your house. Just deal with it.
I need less people in my house. How do I make that happen aside from murder?
Yeah, I feel like
early college
enrollment. The blueprint doesn't end well.
Early college. How about that?
We can do that.
Yep.
All right, guys. We really appreciate you. This is obviously huge in the headlines, and we wanted to get to it while it was fresh. So we hope you enjoyed our coverage of the au pair case of Brendan Banfield being found guilty of the murder of his wife and a handyman. And, it's just so sad.
Yeah. It's awful, dude.
It's awful.
I do handyman work sometimes, like for some friends of mine. And I've thought about venturing out and doing it, like professionally.
Right.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. You will get pulled into a case like this by a special agent working on financial crimes.
Especially me. I mean, look at me.
I've seen this 100%
of times. Who wouldn't want this handsome man?
I don't know. Maybe it's the cough and the
Yeah.
The I sound like that a, would get him.
Sound like a 70-year-old COPD patient trying his best right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your effort powering through the pain, and I appreciate everybody listening in.
All right, guys, we love you. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.